On today's episode of the show, we're talking a little bit about an 0-2 football team, a little bit about Tristan Jebbia, his struggles last week, a lot of it, hopefully, about Jamar Jefferson and his not struggles the last 2 weeks, and who knows, maybe we'll even learn a thing or two about friendship along the way. I am Brady Akins. I am your co-host. I am the sports editor for the Orange Media Network sports team, and I am joined, as always, by the man, the myth, the legend, my friend, and someone that is responsible for introducing himself.
I love the introduction, Brady. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Andres de los Santos. I am a sports contributor, sports broadcaster, and if you know, I go by the Swiss Army Knife.
I was trying to hype you up a little bit and try to bring the energy a little bit in that recording, because like I mentioned in my intro, we are talking about our 0-2 football team, yes, which isn't as fun as talking about a 2-0 football team or a 1-1 football team, which arguably Oregon State should be at this point, but we'll get into it a little bit later.
We'll talk more about that later on.
We'll talk a little bit about Pac-12 refs, everyone's favorite topic.
Everyone's favorite topic in America.
the epitomes of I would say accuracy and just being overall good at their job. They're notorious for that at this point.
Being a good spotter would be another one too.
Great spotters. You always know that you're going to get accuracy with a Pac-12 ref. Mm. And we'll talk about it all. Thank you all for joining us, tuning in, whatever you want to call it. Do you just want to jump right in? I think we want to talk a little bit about what happened last week against Washington Huskies, which if anyone doesn't know at this point, Oregon State lost. They lost on the road to the Washington Huskies November 14th, 27-21. It was another close game.
Yeah, very close game. It was close until the end, really.
No, it was. Like, throughout, I thought I was a little bit worried at the start. I'll be honest.
I was too.
I was a little bit worried. I talked a little bit about it. I did an interview with some people for the Washington student paper just about the game, looking at the game. And right. I told them that if Oregon State needs to win this game, they need to control the first half, because Washington will be shaking off the rust that Oregon State won't, or like at least yep. in a way that they won't, I with agree. Washington not having played a game leading into their game against Oregon State. And so I told them, like, if Oregon State wants to win this game, they're going to need to control the first half. And then they didn't. They didn't really do that, at least not until the second quarter.
Yeah, second quarter when they picked up. Well, we did score first.
We did. That's true, actually. That's true. Technically, yeah, we had a really good special teams play.
Oh man, that special teams play was amazing.
Or at least we took advantage of a really bad special teams play by Washington and turned it into a really good special teams play by us.
Can we talk about that play for a bit?
I would like to talk about that play a little bit.
So first, funny stat. All right. So, you know, last year's game when the Beavers played the Huskies at Oregon State, they lost 19-7. Did you know Jadon Grant, he was the only score of that game for the Beavers? He
had a pick six. I do know that, actually. I remember that.
It's funny how he opened this game scoring after a blocked punt by Hamakurishi Jr.
Jadon Grant, he's just Washington kryptonite in a way. He's always going to score.
And have you seen the clips? It's been on social media. Have you seen the clips of Trevon Bradford running? Oh, like, it's got to be 80 yards. He ran to get a block, and that led to Jadon Grant scoring.
He was the furthest person away from the ball by like at least 50 yards.
He was way back. He was ready to receive the punt, and then the punt never happened, so he just booked it. And then
he sprinted all that way with a quiet game on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah,
at least for Bradford, but made his presence felt on that play.
Oh, he did for sure.
Laid a very crucial block, and then it led to Oregon State scoring first. Special teams scores are always interesting.
They are.
Because I really think they could change the tone of the game, but they're almost, I don't want to say they don't count, because obviously they count for points. And obviously, like, effort goes into it.
You're not used to it. You can't really rely on it.
Like, you can rely on a really strong defense, a really strong offense, but special team scores are few and far between. You can't really count on those carrying you through the game.
Yeah. So you can't rely on, like, everyone blocking a punt or blocking a kick for that matter.
Yeah, not regularly.
Not regularly.
So it was exciting and fun to watch, but, you know, I was still just kind of like, okay, you know, let's see where it leads. And then Oregon State's offense started out kind of slow. Washington was picking up steam on their offense. I think it was kind of a mismatch. At least last week, Oregon State struggled to stop the run against Deion McIntosh, who was the backup running back.
He replaced Max Borgi.
Yes.
Literally. And I didn't find out about that because I was on Twitter and I saw it and I was with the IT guy and he was like, what? Like, we both didn't.
Spreading the news.
Yeah.
I remember, this is a complete tangent, but I remember the Oregon State game last year when Luton didn't start, everyone in the press box was like finding out like at the same time, because like they really kept it quiet leading up to that game.
They did.
And like an hour before the game, someone's just like, "I don't think Luton's playing." Everyone's like, "What?" And we just all turned to look at the guy. "Excuse me?
You
no
say?
Jake Luton?" When did that happen? but yeah, it's bringing it back a little bit now. So I forgive me for getting distracted. You're bringing fine. It back a little bit. Oregon State struggled to stop the run last week against a backup running back. Washington was having their starting running back, but he was a new guy. He was replacing Salvon Ahmed, I think is his name.
I believe you're correct, yeah.
Salvon Ahmed, who had a really good week in the NFL this week.
Yeah.
but then Washington's running back also had a really good week. I mean, it was a really, at least in the first half, it was a strong performance for them on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And so it could have been seen as a matchup problem. And that's kind of what I was worried about through that first half, was like, is Washington just going to run this ball down our throats? Like, are we able to stop them at all?
Can we talk about the call?
Okay, fine. We're dancing around it a little bit.
Can we
call.
Just go straight to the meat and potatoes of this? Okay, let me. Can I give my opinion on the call?
I would love for you to give
okay,
your opinion.
Okay, I know. What's another? Hogwash. It was hogwash. Because, okay. Third and one.
Third and one.
Jamar, it was the inside zone. It ran the ball in. And I swear he got it. And the refs, they walked backwards apparently for some reason. They're like, oh no, it was like way over, like they gave like 10 yards back. It's right there. And then no. And then so like, okay, we'll go for it again. No big deal. Same thing. And I remember, I was covering the game, but I was watching it with my roommates. And we all like jumped up, like, I won't say it, but we were pissed.
This is a family friendly podcast. Censor ourselves just for you.
And I think I speak for behalf of Beaver Nation. We were all pissed. We were all so angry that not once, but twice, that wasn't a gain and a first down. And that was a crucial moment, because literally we were inside the five. If we converted that, we would have scored a touchdown and at most a field goal. Literally, we could have like tied the game. We could have been ahead, but nah, Pac-12's up for like, oh, it was like, no, you did not get it. Bye bye. I could talk about it for hours.
Oregon State, they were down by 3, 24-21. I believe they were coming off a defensive stop on that drive. Or was
I
that the first
so.
Drive of the second half?
The questionable call was the start of the fourth quarter.
Yes. No, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
So they were coming off of a couple defensive stops.
A couple, yeah.
I want to say. And that was huge and rare.
That was very
and
huge.
You, having watched that first half and having watched Washington march up and down the field that entire first half, you were kind of thinking like, hey, we have to take advantage of every one of these we can get, because they're not going to come often. Now, granted, Oregon State's defense really stepped up in the second half.
They played a really good second half. Major props to them. Only home to what? They scored no points in the They're home to three pretty much the entire second
three
half.
Three in the entire second half.
Until the very end, of course. But
you're watching that game after the first half, and you're thinking, we have to take advantage of every single one of these stops, because it's not going to happen often. And we didn't, with the exception of one drive where we moved the ball pretty well, ran the ball especially well,
moved the ball down the field.
Here you are on, like you said, the 5-yard line, third and one. And I saw that third and one, and my thought was like, okay, I thought he got it personally.
I'm sitting here watching this game
and I thought he got it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it was close, right? It was a close call either way. Maybe he got a bad spot, but you know, like sometimes these things happen and it's not a big deal, because we're obviously going to go for it on fourth down here. And we have Jamar Jefferson.
We have to. Exactly.
Who's been great. Who's been awesome.
And phenomenal. Literally phenomenal season so far.
And we already thought he got the first down anyway, the same down and distance. So why can't he do it again? And so they give it to him again. It's fourth and inches. He moves the ball about, I don't know, like 2 yards on a fourth and inches?
I would say 2 yards.
It was not a big gain, but he
But it was enough.
He clearly got enough.
He clearly got it, literally.
I'm just going to say it. He was very evidently over the line to gain. And then Washington got the ball back.
Yeah, some magical way they got the ball back.
I was waiting to like for Ashton Kutcher to like jump out and tell me that I was punked or something, because there was no reasonable way that he didn't get that first down.
I think we all were waiting for that to happen.
massive punked episode on Oregon State fans.
It's crazy because like literally the second after that call, I went on Twitter and Facebook. Just, you know, I want to see like what did Beaver Nation have to say about
it? Test the waters a little bit.
Test the waters, yeah. Let's just say that I cannot say what they said on this podcast because this is a family-friendly podcast.
Family-friendly show.
Family-friendly show. But yeah, people were angry. And I don't blame them. It was, okay, one questionable call, that's fine. It happens to football all the time.
Of course.
Two, what are you doing?
Back-to-back. Two back-to-back plays.
Two back-to-back calls. What are you doing?
And it's, at the moment, we knew it would be big, right?
Yeah.
But that ended up being the turning point because Oregon State held Washington to 3 points total for the rest of the game. Oregon State gets that first down. They have a fresh set of downs like inside the 5 yard line.
Exactly.
They're knocking on the door of the end zone.
Literally, yeah.
That could change the tide of the game, quite honestly. Because Oregon State has a lead. Washington has to kind of break away from that identity because they were definitely leaning into the run a lot in that game. They have to change their identity. They give the ball to their quarterback who's making his first start in college.
Yep.
To try to beat Oregon State through the air. And it just completely changes the tone of the fabric when Washington has the ball with a lead rather than when they're playing from behind.
I heard this theory that apparently there's a theory. I heard that because of the elements, the ball slipped out before Jefferson crossed. And I was like, really? You're going to blame the elements for this game? Okay, granted, the elements... It was raining. For those who don't know, it was rainy, it was windy, and it was cold.
It was a gross game. It was really gross.
And the stats really show it. I mean, look at Tristan Jebbia passing 11 for 24, only 85 yards, literally. But Jamar Jefferson, clearly the rain didn't affect him. 23 carries, 133 yards, one touchdown. But maybe could have been the rain. I doubt it because, I mean, these guys are – it's Oregon State. we play in rain all the time.
Yeah, I mean – Oregon athletes, you know, Oregon State, Oregon, Portland State, whatever team you want to pick, like they're used to playing in the rain. It's the Pacific Northwest. It rains here. It's what happens. But it was a game, you mentioned the elements. It is a game where you kind of have to run the ball. And yeah. I really thought that Oregon State was going to do that anyway, just based on the personnel that they had and then the personnel that Washington lost. Because
yes,
I really think that Oregon State, for better or worse, is a team that lives and dies by the running game.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if you look across their score lines from last year, it's really inconsistent. Like you have some games where you score 50 plus, you have some games where you score 7 points.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the one common link between them is that in the high scoring games, Jamar Jefferson and Artavis Pierce from last year got going. And in the low scoring games, they couldn't get anything going.
Yep. And I agree.
Made Oregon State one dimensional, and they're just not a team built to throw when they can't run the ball. And so I thought that maybe I mentioned how it might have been an advantage of Washington, Washington's offense versus Oregon State's defense. You could say that the other way around too. Jamar Jefferson being amazing once again. We've mentioned it like 50 times now.
Several thousand times. Yep.
It's worth mentioning another 1,000 more because he's been awesome these last two games. He was especially awesome against Washington. And Washington was a team that had a lot of returning starters on defense, but lost a lot on the defensive line. And if you give Jamar Jefferson the hole to get past the first line of defense, he's just going to make you pay over and over again. And there was a few drives where they just kept giving him the ball, feeding him the rock, and he was moving the ball. And those were Oregon State's best drives. When they kind of got away from that, like be it game script or just they felt like they wanted to throw, whatever the reason was, they struggled. And you could say that maybe it was the elements, but Tristan Jebbia did not have a particularly great game.
Yeah, it's so comparing his stats. Okay, 11 for 24 against Washington, 11 for 24, only 85 yards. But you look at the Washington State game, and he was popping off, literally. He was 34 for 48 for 329 yards and one touchdown.
So, he was moving the ball, especially in that second half.
Yes, right? He was. Yeah. I mean, he knew that. I mean, granted, different situation. They were down big and he needed to score. But, you know, you look at, I don't know, just it wasn't there. It makes me, I hate to say it, but it really makes me question, is Jebbia going to be the quarterback moving forward? I mean, the press conference, Coach Smith said, yes, we saw faith in him, which is good. You want to hear that from a head coach. You want to hear, we have faith in this guy. Granted, all athletes have bad days. No one's perfect.
Yeah, of course.
Maybe it's just a bad day. Maybe it's elements, bad day. Maybe it's because of 8 p.m. game. Come on, Pac-12. It's a big game up. But yeah, it's just I'm not saying that I don't believe in him because I so do. But that game just made me question even more if he should really be the starter. Because I do want to see Chance Nolan kind of play. I mean, he was ranked the number one dual threat junior college quarterback in the country.
There's an allure of that backup quarterback too, yes, right? Like there's this allure of the unknown where you just want to see what you have, especially in a young guy like a junior college transfer.
Yeah. So I just want to, I'm really curious to see, I'm curious to see how Jebby will step up, because I know he will. He's not done. He's nowhere near done. So I think I'm curious to see how he'll step up.
Yeah. I'm still optimistic, I think. Mm-hmm. It's similar to Chance Nolan. I mean, he wasn't the number one ranked quarterback coming out, but Justin Jebby was a very highly touted quarterback coming out of high school.
Yeah, well, I agree.
4-star recruit across the board, I believe. And I don't know, you referenced his stat line against Washington State. I think maybe some of that was inflated by a lot of quick passes that you needed to have in order to get back into that game, but he still played solid. You know, he was making quick decisions. He was getting the ball to his playmakers. He was more than capable of leading the team down on drives in that second half. After week two, he's going to need to bounce back.
Yeah, I agree.
He's definitely going to need a bounce
back. This next game is a must win for sure.
Less than 50% of your passes being completions isn't going to cut it. 85 passing yards isn't going to cut it. And I get that he had a lot working against him in this game. He had the elements, like you said, the rain and the wind and how gross and disgusting and icky this game was. He had a really good Washington secondary. How I talked about how they had a lot of returning starters, like all of them are from the secondary. And that is just a secondary that produces NFL player on NFL player, just on a regular basis, with Buda Baker being maybe the highlight of that. And so it's a tough game. I understand that, both for conditions and who you're going against.
Yes, but of course.
If you're going to be a starting quarterback, you have to bounce back from games like that. You're allowed to have them, but this is going to be a very big game for Oregon State and for Jebbia, I think. Mm-hmm. Because Oregon State, like you said, they have to win this game. You can't start 0-3 in a seven game season, excuse me. You cannot.
Nope. Especially now.
You can't complete 50% of your passes for 85 yards in back-to-back games either if you want to win. You just can't. And so it's going to be a huge game for Tristan Jebbia to recover. It's also going to be a huge game for Oregon State going forward. And they're playing your favorite college football team in Cal.
Not my favorite. I just think that they're going to win Puck to North. But before we move on to that, I'm going to ask you a question, Brady. Okay. So, you know Teagan Quatoriano, right? You know he was highly touted as this year's tight end?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, well, I'm looking at stats right now. And it's interesting to me. So, against Washington, right? Quatoriano only had one target. No receptions. Washington State, he had two receptions, one catch for 12 yards.
Interesting.
But you look at Luke Musgrave, and I don't know, it could just be me, but he's dropped a lot of catches. Is it just me that thinks that?
I think it's just you, because
really?
I was thinking the exact opposite, where I thought that Musgrave has been the absolute man and that Jebby is living it behind him a lot of his times, especially against Washington. Given Luke Musgrave, I think that he's impressed me the first two games. Okay. Given he's, you know, like 20 feet tall in the tight end, he's not the most athletic person in the world. And he's had a lot of passes kind of hit him in the hands that maybe he should have.
Okay, that's what, he hasn't dropped them, but they've hit him in the hands for sure.
It's a lot of like him kind of turning back around to like catch balls that are behind him, which, you know, maybe like a Trevon Bradford, or like a Champ Fleming's, like a receiver could maybe do. But someone that's a tight end, you kind of have to hit him in the hands for that. And he's getting open. I mean, it's hard to not be open when you're, again, 20 feet tall. 6'6", actually, I think is how tall he is. Nah. But he's pretty big out there. And, I mean, I'm excited to have a tight end out there like that that's so big and just presents a matchup problem for linebackers that are obviously big themselves, but maybe not as tall as someone like Luke Musgrave. You can just, like, kind of reach up and grab the ball if you put him in the right spot.
Okay, well, you're excited to see him.
sorry, I kind of railroaded your point.
It's okay. Yeah, I mean, I want to see more out of him. Because, he's dropped a couple. Like, for example, Luke Musgrave. 2 for 5 against Washington. 25 yards, which is not bad at all. Washington State, where he was 3 for 7 for 40 yards. So, yes, he has good stats, but from what I've seen a lot of him dropping passes.
But it has been a lot of the ball being in his area, but not ending up being catched.
That's how I see it. Yes, that's
something that I will agree with.
Okay, yeah.
Whether it's a Musgrave problem or a Jebbia problem, or probably a little bit of both.
I think it's a bit of both. Well, the defense too. The defense has really killed us last two games.
Yeah, it's a combination of a lot of different things.
Yeah,
and I'm just excited to have someone so big out there catching passes. I think that'll be fun. and you just hope that Jebby can get on the same page with a lot of these guys.
Yeah,
like whether it is more of a Jebby problem or more of a Musgrave problem, you hope that your quarterback either way can solve it. You know, you hope that is true. Because playing quarterback, I know I've talked about it before, but playing quarterback is so much timing, so much chemistry, so much knowing where your receivers are going to be and trusting that they're going to be there. And it falls to the quarterback, I think, a lot of the time to be able to solve a lot of those problems. Even if it is like hitting him in the hands and missing it, it's about like, okay, like how do we solve this? Where are you actually going to be? When are you going to get there? Working on timing, working on chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see how it goes going forward.
Okay, speaking of quarterbacks, can we talk about Jaden Delora?
Yeah, sure. Let's talk about Jaden Delora.
Okay, I'm a Beaver fan, of course, but oh my goodness, he impressed me so much in that game.
He's literally fun.
He's honestly, I think it's so good. I think he's living the dream. Literally, new coach, like freshman quarterback. You beat Oregon State. You're in the Pac-12 conference. That's a dream come true for him. And he's 1-1. They were leading against Oregon, but Oregon came back. Different story.
They played tough against Oregon.
They played tough. I really like seeing Delora play. I think he's a dual threat quarterback. Literally, he was 18 for 33 with 227 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. And in the rushing game, he had 8 carries, 43 yards, and a touchdown.
He's a guy that can beat you in 2 different ways. And that's such a cliche, but it's so true for Delora. Yeah,
he's such a good quarterback. And I'm really excited to see him play. I hope he transfers here eventually at some point.
Well, I would. Delora, this is our sales pitch.
Yeah, Delora, please come.
we want to see you play for Oregon State. He could dye his
hair orange. Orange and black are better. Yeah, he could dye. Oh, he could dye his hair orange.
I want to ask you about you specifically about Delora though, because you had the privilege, at least from my perspective, you had the privilege to be in Reese's Stadium covering the game and watching Delora play live. What was that like?
Oh man, it was so. I was broadcasting right, and you know, Steven, our radio advisor, he tells us don't be biased, right? So I wasn't being biased, but so I would announce like Delora's running 10 yards, 15 yards, 20 yards, stack with at the 5. And then the back of my head, I was like, holy, you know what?
Expletives.
Yeah. I was like, he can run. Because he had one interception, right? But he just got blown up by one of our defensive linemen, and Grant was there, got the reception, but he was on fire in that game. And I think Rolovich made the right call in making Delora the starter, because I was surprised. I gave credit where credit was due, and I was in shock. I was like,
well, that one pick is like kind of a given for a true freshman quarterback in his first start. You know, you can't expect him to be Patrick Mahomes straight out the gate kind of thing.
Like 50 for 50.
Yeah, I mean, like 400 yards and 7 touchdowns. You can't expect that, but like there was so much good in Delora's game.
There was so much good.
This is an Oregon State podcast, but like, man, Oregon State.
We're just giving credit where credit is due.
Of course, yes. I mean,
Delora is a threat, honestly.
He played against us, you know.
He did.
We got to see him, and so we got to talk about him. And I would like to mention that interception that you referenced. You mentioned that Delora got hit on that play, like as he made the throw. It's interesting that the one time that Delora made a crucial mistake was the time that Oregon State decided to bring pressure and get to Delora and not bring 3-man rushes.
Well, Grant, you can't be surprised, because imagine throwing a football when like someone like 350 pounds is like crashing into you at the same time.
No, exactly. I mean, that's my point.
You can't be surprised at that.
That's my point. And I know that we're here to talk about the Washington game, but that Washington State game just frustrated me so much, because you have a quarterback who's making his first start. He's never played a snap of college football. He's like, what, like 18, 19, he's a kid. He's young.
Yeah, he's our age.
Well, yeah, age. I mean, yeah, he's a true freshman in college. He's young. He's inexperienced. And it just, in my mind, I was thinking, okay, let's make this hard on him by like
exactly. That's always five rushers. Too. Bring the pressure.
Bringing 6 rushers, trying to rattle him, force him to make a quick
like
decision.
Blitz every single play.
Blitz. Like force him to think about what he's doing, though. Don't give him the time to just sit there and pick his spots. Mm-hmm. But we didn't want to do that. It seemed like we wanted
to. What's scary about him is just so the Beavers, they're playing a lot of zone coverage. They're playing a lot of man-to-man zone coverage. Mm-hmm. But Delora's one of those players where okay, he's gonna pass it off to McIntosh, he's gonna throw it, he's gonna run off himself. You really don't know what he's gonna do versus like, you know, Jebbia, it's either just a handoff or a throw. I've seen him rushing. Let's talk about Jebbia rushing for a minute. He had 2 attempts against Washington and lost 15 yards in both attempts.
Is that, that's probably a lot of sack based.
Sack-based. Yeah. But I think Dolar is one of those quarterbacks where it's just what he's going to do. And you really, you can't predict what he's going to do. And that's a good thing that Washington State has him, which I really wish we had him. But
it was such a matchup problem Dolar was against Oregon State. Yeah. Because of that, you mentioned a lot of zone. They had a lot of guys in coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the problem with having to stop someone like Dolar is that if you want to contain him, you want to stop him from running, you need to dedicate a spy. You need to have someone on that second level watching him, making sure he doesn't break contain. But the problem with that is if you have someone dedicated just to stopping Dolar from running, that opens up the passing and that opens up holes when you're dropping so many people in coverage. And especially when you can't get to him quickly, he's just going to wait for his guys to get open, find those holes, and he's going to, you know, make the throws, which he's more than capable of doing. That's probably enough on Dolar.
Okay, can we talk about there's another elephant in the room.
Okay.
So we know Hamo Qureshi Jr. pretty much led the nation in sacks at one point last year.
Led the nation in tackles for loss.
Second in sacks. But can we talk about how he has yet to get a single sack this season?
I do want to talk about that actually.
Okay, so for against Washington State, I honestly was not surprised he was not able to get a sack. Mm-hmm. Because did my research, and between the O-line for Washington State, there was a combined 77 starts. Oof. And the right tackle, I think his name was Abraham something Abraham, he was rated the best, I think the best pass blocker in the country, something like that. He was up there. He's good, very good. But in that Washington State game, Hamo Qureshi Jr. didn't really get a tackle. I mean, he got two tackles, but and against Washington State, he had four tackles. So six tackles on the season so far, and you're how do I put this?
Rashid.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I think it's concerning, and I'm really glad you mentioned it because I wasn't going to, but I think it's important to talk about because he's someone that I know you and I were both very excited to watch coming into the season.
Of course, yeah.
He's Hamo Qureshi Jr. Exactly. He's the guy that no one was talking about, even though he just put up these insane numbers last year.
You compared him to Chase Young, even.
I compared him to Chase Young. Hamo Qureshi had more tackles for loss than Chase Young, who was the number two pick in the NFL draft and is probably going to win Rookie of the Year this year, or Defensive Rookie of the Year this year, excuse me.
I see that.
He's going to have some competition. Antoine Winfield's good, but, you know, this isn't an NFL podcast.
Different
story, different time. But I think it's a really good point. I'm glad you mentioned it. This is another thing I talked about with the Washington people when I was doing that interview, is because they mentioned him at Rashid, and I think I said verbatim in that Washington State game, it doesn't matter if you're Lawrence Taylor, Reggie White, whoever you are, if you're only rushing three defenders, you're not going to get to the quarterback, especially against an offensive line, like you said, that was really good.
So much experience.
Literally. And so I was ready to give Hamo Qureshi the benefit of the doubt because I just thought that was a schematic kind of fault on the Beavers, was never really bringing pressure. Because I think that linebacker, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a better group on the defense than linebacker. Hamo Qureshi, Omar Spates are both fantastic.
Yes, I agree.
Fantastic players.
Avery Roberts,
thank you. It doesn't matter, right? It doesn't matter if you're only rushing three and not bringing more. If it's five blockers on three pass rushers, you're not going to get to the quarterback. And so I was willing to give Hamaker the benefit of the doubt for that one, especially because last year he had another quiet game against Washington State. He just doesn't play well against Washington State.
It's a Washington's man.
But then against Washington, it's two games in a row in a seven-game season, and you start to get a little concerned.
Yeah, I'm concerned. I mean, Oregon State only has one sack in the entire season. The entire defense, only one sack, and that was by Kitan Oladapo.
Man, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I did my homework.
Well, I mean, okay, so like for me, one thing this job has gotten me into is reading stats, so that's all I do now. But yeah, just that blows my mind because only one sack for the defense the entire year by Oladapo, who – going back to the Washington game, he was called out for targeting. You remember that?
Yes. Yes, I do.
So different time. But only one sack in the entire season. What do you do? Is it granted, both secondaries and the defense on both teams is spectacular. You got to give credit where credit is due. But if you're Oregon State, you're really wondering, what am I doing wrong? You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question. You're sitting here at one sack on the season over the course of two games when you have a guy that had 14 and a half by himself.
Literally.
Over 12 games. Literally by himself. And that's in addition to, I don't have the numbers in front of me, forgive me, but like however many other sacks the team got, which I'm sure is, you know, more than one.
Oh, Washington State had 4. And do you want to know? do you want to know Washington's?
Yeah.
We had 2.
Okay.
So they had 2, so.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, that's cool. Right. That's good. That sounds about right. And bringing it back to Hamilton State against Washington, you talked about how steady Washington State offensive line was. All their combined starts, their one new guy like being really highly ranked coming out of high school or junior college.
Yes.
Washington didn't have that. Washington lost Trey Adams, their left tackle. Washington lost Nick Harris, their safety.
Yep.
And so you're replacing a lot of really talented, because both those guys are in the NFL now.
Both, yeah, both of those are amazing.
You're replacing a lot of really talented offensive linemen, and you still can't make much noise. And I think that for a team and a player that really thrived on getting to the backfield, it's been a problem. And I think that you've seen Hamika Rashid get to the backfield a couple times, but when he's there, he's at or around the feet and the ankles of the players, and he can't
really bring them
down. Watch for that again when they play Cal next week. Watch for it again, because I think that he's doing well enough at getting there. It's just that when he gets there, he's usually on the ground, and he can't do much when he gets there.
Yeah. Speaking of Cal, did you get a chance to watch the Cal versus USC game? UCLA game? Sorry.
I caught a little bit of it. I caught enough to know that Cal struggled.
Yeah. One thing I saw, because, you know, I like watching football.
Of course.
One thing I noticed was that Cal's defense against the run game was not there. Literally, watched like UCLA's, most of the scores are rushing touchdowns.
They ran, UCLA did, for like
over
240 yards, right? Like 220, I think. It was like 240.
Something like that, roughly, yeah.
Team total. That's a matchup nightmare
that
for
is.
Cal against Oregon State.
Because that's all we do.
I think that even Coach Smith referenced it a little bit in his press conference, right? Like he said, we're not one-dimensional, but we're a team that runs the ball really, really well.
Which I like that he said that. I like that he did say that. Because, you know, like, I think the question that was asked when he answered that, and I think someone was like, is Oregon State just a rushing team? Because, like, obviously you're comparing stats. And he was like, no, we're not. We're not one-dimensional, but we go back and forth.
But there's something that we're really good. We're really good at. I think that, I mean, you know, you're not one-dimensional, like you say, but that's your strength.
Yes.
Is the running game, especially when you have Jamar Jefferson.
They're also getting smart with the running game. There's one play in particular against Washington. I don't know if you watched it. Okay, so it was a direct step to Jebbia. Jebbia gave it to Jefferson. Jefferson ran to his right. Jefferson pitched the ball. Fleming's caught it, ran the other way. It was a reverse pitch.
Oh, yes, I remember Fleming, this.
And I remember I watched it. And I was like, why don't we do that more?
Yeah, right. Creative stuff in the running game.
Jamar Jefferson. Everyone's going to think Jefferson has it because it's Jamar Jefferson. And then Fleming's comes out of nowhere and just like supersonic speed down the. I think he gained 8 yards on that play, but I think that was a great play. We need to run that play more. Or
stuff
more
like,
plays
that
like that
is what you have to do with Champ Fleming's, I think.
Yeah.
Because through two games, again, it's up and down for Jebbia, but one thing I noticed is that he doesn't like to push the ball downfield a whole lot. It's a lot of like quick passes, first read stuff. Whoever like he sees open immediately gets the ball. And I think that for a guy like Champ Flemings, who's lightning fast, but 5'5", he's going to thrive when you try to get him into open space and into the open field. And so I think that, because he is amazing, Champ Flemings is. He's a talent for sure.
Yep.
But you have to be creative with how you get him the ball. You have to try to find the way to get him the ball quickly, maybe behind the line of scrimmage, and use him in a way to where you can just kind of create open field for him like that.
Literally,
kind of manufacture him into a situation where he has the ball and has open space in front of him. And I think that's one really good way to do it. It makes me think of how the 49ers use Debo Samuel, if I can use an NFL analogy.
Please.
You're the 49ers fan,
I'm
so
a 49ers
I'll
fan,
hype
so
up.
Have at it.
I'll hype him up a little bit, but it's Debo Samuel, like, he's probably one of the most talented guys in the receiving corps, if not the most talented guy in the receiving corps.
Yeah.
And what they do with him is really impressive, because it's a lot of stuff where they design plays specifically to get him the ball in open up field for him, because he can make people miss once he gets into open field. He's a really talented runner.
And
I think that's what you have to do with Champ Flemings, right?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, granted, it's a little different because Deebo Samuel is like, I think 6'2".
That's true. That's fair. Flemings different is styles.
5'5".
He's 5'5".
I do see what you're saying. I do agree with it. And that play was smart because literally everybody was running to the right side of the field because of that. Jefferson's going to run. Then you pitch it as Flemings on the other way where there's nobody open field. I think, yeah, you bring up a good point. I agree with that.
It's everyone expecting the ball to go to Jefferson because the ball has gone to Jefferson a billion times already.
Yeah.
And doing another NFL analogy, it reminds me of my team a little bit, the Titans, who give the ball to Derrick Henry 30 times in a row.
Yep.
And then they fake it to him. They play action it. And then there's just like, you know, three defenders back there and Khalif Raymond like streaking downfield in open space. It's using the running game to your advantage and being smart with it, like you said. It's because you have Jamar Jefferson, who's amazing, once again.
Yep.
Just saying amazing. It. And it's at a point, the defense is going to wisen up and be like, all right, this man is getting the ball in some capacity. But using that to your advantage in flipping the ball to Champ Flemings in open field is smart. It's smart.
I agree. But, yeah, this – we need to win this game.
We need to win this game.
We need a win at least. I'll be happy with a win, you know, but – Last time they played, it was 21-17. It was at Cal. Another great game.
Oregon State won.
Oregon State won. But it's, like I said, it's one, it's 2020, and two, it's Pac-12 football, so anything can happen. And I think we're all, like, scared for this game, to be honest.
Yeah, it reminds me of the UCLA game last year where – It didn't turn out this way, but we all kind of came into it with this thought that, like, if we want to win, we have to do it now. Like, UCLA has not looked particularly great heading into this game. We haven't looked particularly great. Right? What's up?
When they played, they were like 0-4.
Yes, I think it was close.
Something, yeah, it was like, but.
And so we all kind of thought, like, hey, if we want to win, we kind of have to do it now. And it's a similar feeling. I don't think that this is going to be our – I don't think this team is going to go 1-6. I just think that there's too much talent.
No, there's no way.
And that Jonathan Smith is too good of a head coach. But if you want to jumpstart your season, this is the week. You're coming in against a team that only has one game to year two. You're coming against a team that just lost by 24 to UCLA, who isn't particularly great themselves. Mm-hmm. You're going up against a team that gave up 224 yards on the ground, which is where you thrive. It's the ultimate get right game. Also, it's at home, which I know that there's no home field advantage, but you don't have to travel. You don't have to travel all the way to Berkeley. That's cool. You can be here in your element that you're used to. And it's the ultimate get right game, right?
We have to win this one because
you have to get right now.
This one, because if realistically, if we're looking, Oregon, they're not going to go down without a fight. Mm-hmm. So that one's going to be a tough one. I'm not saying Cal is not going to be a fight, but realistically, Oregon's going to put way up more of a fight.
It's a game that on paper you should win, right?
Yes, I agree. That's how I would say it.
To Jonathan Smith's credit, one of the things that I noticed from his teams last year was that for the most part, they took care of the games that they should win, which I don't think is something that you could say for teams past. It's when you came in against a team that you have a realistic chance against, they took care of business, Oregon State did.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, here's another one, right? Here's a team that, like I said, is you have the matchup advantage. Here's a team that struggled last week, doesn't have a ton of experience. You have to win. You have to.
We have to, literally. I love this is the message of this episode. We have to win the next game.
It's interesting. I think I might have written a little bit about it. I can't remember if I read it or if I wrote it, honestly, at this point. But if Oregon State wants to have a winning regular season, they have to win four of their next five games at this point.
Yeah.
After losing their first two, because you get seven regular season games.
Seven.
And so you have to win four of your next five if you want to have a winning regular season. And it's a tough schedule. It's a really, really tough group.
Oregon, I believe it's Stanford. No, wait.
Stanford's week six.
Stanford's week six.
There's Utah in week five.
Utah is week five.
Who knows if they're going to play?
Oh, yeah. that can, realistically, if that game gets canceled, can we just mark it as a win for us?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Please? I think that's fair. I mean, I'm okay with that.
I'm fine with
that. I don't hear any objections.
If Larry Scott is somehow listening to this, please just let us kick Larry, the win.
Buddy. I am begging. Just
honestly,
I want that automatic win. You will not hear any fight from me.
Nope, no flack at all. We will understand 100%, but please let us
we'll
win.
We'll give you the pass on that one. I'm willing to give you the pass just on that one.
Please let us give us the win.
And so I hate to belabor this point, but it's a game that you have to win. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't be sitting here 0-3 in a 7-game season, especially because Oregon State is 0-2 right now, and I hate to bring that up again.
Of course.
And they've lost two close games where they were competitive in both. Like,
yeah, there was lost by 10 with Washington State, lost by 6 to Washington. Yeah. So it's not too bad.
That Washington game was very close. The Washington State game might be a little bit inflated because it took a second half comeback to get that close. Mm-hmm. But there was never a point in either game where, like, well, I got to turn this off. I can't watch this anymore. And they were both close competitive games. I see an objection.
I beg to differ. So when Oregon State was down by 3, okay, against Washington State, and they went for the onside kick, and they didn't get it. Washington State got it, and then McIntosh ran 44 yards for a touchdown.
I'll allow that one, actually, because I'll allow that as a, I got to turn this game off right now.
You saw my finger went up. I was like, wait.
Because that was a real punch to the heart is what that was.
I was like, that one hurt.
I know, because at that point, you're like, okay, Washington State's going to win this game, you know? But then they just pile it on. They really just go for the throw.
I understand and respect the decision. You know, you're down by 3 with, mm-hmm. like, I think it was like maybe 2:30 left in the game. I respect the decision. But
it really did hurt to watch.
It really hurt. It did. That one did hurt.
But my point is that they've been close and competitive in each of these games.
I agree.
But here's the thing about that, right? So I want to talk a little bit about Jonathan Smith's coaching tenure, because he takes over in year one and he goes 2-10. And the thing about 2-10 is that it's bad and soul sucking, but it's also, you look at a lot of those games and none of them were close. It was blowouts pretty much across the board, except for, you know, your two wins.
Right.
You take the step in year two where you win more games, obviously, but a lot of your losses are really, really close and really competitive. Yes,
literally close.
3-point loss against Stanford, 3-point loss against Hawaii,
mm-hmm.
12-point loss, which I know is 12, but it's still only 2 scores against Washington. You have a lot of games that are really close, and you look at that jump from year one to year two, and if you're me at least, you think to yourself, okay, we might have something going here. And logically, the next step is we go from losing those close games to winning those close games. At least, like I said, at least I thought so, is the next logical jump. You go from getting blown out across the board. You go from losing a lot, but losing a lot of close games. And then you go to winning some close games. And then, you know, you're sitting here in a shortened season, maybe 5-2, maybe 4-3, but a winning season. But that hasn't happened yet.
No,
that hasn't happened yet. It looks a lot like 2019 again, which was a step in the right direction, but you can't sit there in that 5-7. Well, we almost had them kind of camp.
Right. I agree. Hands down.
So we're waiting to take the next step, and mm-hmm. I got to see it at some point, you know?
Yeah, this is going to be tough just because it's bad enough that it's already 7 games. So, you know, you have, all these players have the mindset where every game, every quarter, every drive, every play matters.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, I don't know. This is tough for sure because at this point, I really just want Oregon State to have a 500 record. I'm happy with that.
Yeah, that'd be great. When's the last time that happened?
Yeah.
I think it was 2014, 13.
The last time we had 5 wins? 2013, last time. That was finished 5-7.
a lot of defeatist energy on this podcast, which is hard to avoid when you're 0-2. But I really do think that A, this is still a talented team.
Yes, I agree. Hands down.
B, they're in the right hands with Jonathan mm-hmm. Smith. And C, I think that Oregon State ends up winning this game. And
I agree.
I think that we're close to the end here. So I kind of want to ask you, how do you think this game goes and what do you think the score is?
Oh, tough one.
I did put you on the spot.
Okay, well, from what I saw, Cal's run game defense is not the greatest. Our run game is one of the greatest in the Pac-12. I could say that confidently.
I think that's fair.
I think I'm gonna play it safe. It's, I'm gonna say Beavers by 10.
Okay, I like That's it. Fair. I'm not gonna play it safe. I think that from what I've seen in a limited capacity, having only played one game against Cal, they're not a team that's quite right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe it was just week one nerves, jitters, shaking off the rust, whatever it is. But I think that just based on what I've seen, they're not a team that looks right across the board. And they're also a team that really struggles in stopping the run.
Yes.
Which Oregon State has no aversions to running the ball a lot. They haven't had a bad running game yet this season. I know it's only been two games, but Jamar Jefferson's been awesome in both. That's the last time I'm going to say it.
That's where you're padding.
That's just Jamar Jefferson was awesome. Put it on a t-shirt. get it printed somewhere. But it's just a matchup nightmare, I think.
Yeah.
Especially for a Cal offense that only ended up scoring 10 points when UCLA the week before allowed like close to 50.
Yes. That is huge.
I think that even if Oregon State's defense isn't quite where they want to be, which I think is at least fair to say for, you know, a game and a half of a game is mm-hmm. fair. They weren't yep. quite where they wanted to be. I think that even still you could have a solid game against an offense struggling. And I think they will. Mm-hmm. I can see Oregon State winning this game, and I am going to, like I said, I'm not playing it safe. Because, you know, what's the fun in that? I'm going 38-17 Oregon State, and that is my official prediction. And
I'm also going to predict that Hamel Kureishi Jr. gets his first sack of the season this game.
I'm good at that. I like that.
I'm going to predict that.
If anyone thinks I'm crazy, if anyone thinks I'm bananas, I would just like to point out, and it's in print, you can find it, I predicted the score of the Washington-Oregon State game exactly right.
Yep, yeah.
You can look at it. Go to, you know, shout out to our peers over in Seattle. Go to the Daily UW, go to their sports section, check out the conversation I had with the Washington paper. It's in print. I said
maybe
Washington 27.
Maybe that should be your nickname. Nostradamus Jr.
Nostradamus Jr. Well, hold on. Let's see how this week goes.
Okay,
if
you're
I'm right 2 weeks in a row, though, I'm going to go buy a lottery ticket or something.
Honestly, I'm about
to retiring.
I'm
banking on my football genius to carry me to wealth.
Nostradamus Jr. There you go.
At the end of the week, I have a new nickname. But I think that I'm good. Are you good?
Yeah, I'm good. I think we covered just about everything. We covered both the good and the bad and the ugly.
Yeah, we covered all of our bases. We talked a little about Cal. We talked a lot about Washington. We talked about Jaden DeLora. And I really do think that we did learn a lot about friendship along the way. And I'm glad that you all were here to join us on that journey. Until next week, go Beavs. Good luck against Cal. Watch out for Hamika Rashid. Watch out for 38-17 win. And I'll talk to y'all next week.
Until next week.